I'm Bill Hemmer, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Wednesday, July 17th, 2019. I'm Lisa Brady. The Democrats' 2020 frontrunner takes a risk, telling voters something they've heard before on health care.
Strategically, it's a smart plan for Biden to say, listen, we're going to let everybody keep what they've got if they want.
I'm Dave Anthony. The protests in Hong Kong have lasted nearly 2 months. And we talked to a leader who came to America to get more U.S. support.
We are fighting a war bigger than the individual. We are fighting for freedom. This is Hong Kong people's freedom.
And I'm Jane Harmon. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
This might sound familiar.
Anyone who has their employer-based health insurance they like, they can keep it.
Former Vice President Joe Biden, the current frontrunner for the Democratic presidential nomination, announcing his health care plan and sounding a lot like his old boss.
If you like your doctor, you'll be able to keep your doctor. If you like your health care plan, you'll be able to keep your health care plan.
But President Obama was later panned for that pledge being broken after Obamacare was passed, and Democrats were punished at the polls in the next midterm elections. So how risky is it for Biden to make the same promise?
Short term, though, I think it's a smart strategy to defend Obamacare in the Democratic primary.
Tom Bevin is co-founder and president of Real Clear Politics.
He's running against a whole host of folks who all want to be to his left and have single payer or Medicare for all or whatever the case may be. And we saw this conflict expose itself during the first debate, where you had folks like Michael Bennett and John Delaney who were saying, listen, I just don't think it's a good idea to take health insurance away from people. We can add to what they have. But, you know, we're talking about 180 million folks who have private health insurance. And so I think that's where Joe Biden is correct to push back against that and really try and occupy that center space in the Democratic primary.
Yeah, he's really trying to portray Obamacare as something you can build on as opposed to the Medicare for all approach. What have the latest polls shown on this issue? I mean, I know overall healthcare is still really the top concern among voters.
It is. Yeah. Healthcare is number one. Economy is number two. And immigration is number three at the moment. And you know, healthcare was number one in 2018 as well. I mean, there are a lot of concerns. You know, it's interesting. Real Clear, we have a polling operation called Real Clear Opinion Research, and we did a poll on healthcare a couple of months ago. And it's one of the interesting things was there's this similar phenomenon where folks think the system is broken, but not their own personal care. Right. It's the same thing with like Congress. You know, Congress's approval ratings are 10% or 19%. You ask people, do you like Congress? They say, oh, God, we hate Congress. Congress is terrible. What do you think of your congressman? I like him. He's pretty good. He or she. Same thing. What do you think of the healthcare system? Oh, it's awful. It's broken. It's terrible. What do you think of your healthcare? I like it. It's actually pretty good. So Medicare for All does poll well because it's a catchy, digestible phrase. And but when you start digging down into the nitty gritty of, well, would you be okay if you had to, wait 3 months for that elective operation that you wanted, or that you might lose access to your doctor or provider? Or are you willing to pay higher taxes to allow this to be, accessible to everyone in the United States? Then the support for it starts to drop. And so that's really where I think it becomes somewhat of an iffy proposition. People are concerned about healthcare. They're concerned about cost. They're concerned about access. But a lot of them, again, like what they have, and they think the system is broken, but they're not really willing to give up what they have to fix the system because they like what they have. So it's an interesting and very complicated issue, but it is certainly at the top of the minds of most Americans.
Right. So it's the kind of issue that makes sense, I guess, for politicians to talk about it. But then where a voter is going to land in terms of which plan they'll actually support on election day is a big if. And I guess for the Republicans, well, I don't know. I'll ask you, in the polling, is it a problem for Republicans that the president hasn't really lived up to his pledge of we will propose a better alternative than Obamacare?
Well, yeah. I mean, there is the sort of old saw that you can't beat something with nothing. And right now, Republicans have nothing. They have not been able to come up with an alternative to Obamacare. Trump tweeted a few months ago that, you know, Republicans would be the party of health care. Just wait. It's going to be great. And right after he tweeted that, sent, you know, Republicans in Congress sort of their hair on fire because they had no idea what he was talking about. There were no plans. There were no meetings going on. None of that. You know, Trump has delivered on prescription drugs to a certain degree, although we just saw some prescription drug prices go back up a little bit. But, you know, that's been sort of his main focus. Is that enough to get the job done? I don't think so. I think Trump will have to have something to offer as an alternative. But the point that Joe Biden and others are making, which is if you're talking about union workers in the states that are going to matter, right? Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, and these folks have negotiated, you know, the Cadillac plans. They've got great health insurance. They've been, you know, giving up salaries, you know, increases in their salary to pay for health benefits that have been part of their, you know, hard won contracts over years and years and years. Are you really going to offer a plan that's going to take that insurance away from them and offer them something that is less than what they currently have? That is a big time issue. And it eventually comes down to a binary choice. So I think it is going to be fascinating to watch this play out on the Democratic side and certainly in the general election to see who the nominee is and what Trump can offer as an alternative.
In the meantime, there's a case in a federal appeals court that could toss out Obamacare, which, regardless of which way that goes, might be appealed and get Obamacare back before the U.S. Supreme Court again. If it gets tossed out, though, in the meantime, who's going to get the blame for that?
Well, that's a good question. you know, because this is a lawsuit that the Trump administration is pursuing through the Department of Justice. And you know, it's just one of those things, or at least they're backing it. I guess it's in the states. Republicans, there was this big debate among Republicans, has been ever since Obamacare was passed. Do we just repeal it? Or do we have to have something to replace it with? It had to be repeal and replace. And Republicans could never settle on a single strategy for that. And as a result, I think they looked like they didn't really have a plan. And again, some of the more popular features of Obamacare, right? Young people staying on insurance till they're 26 and you know, pre-existing conditions are covered, et cetera, et cetera. Once those were offered to people, again, even though it was only to a small slice of the public, it's tough to take those things away. And so Republicans were on the short side of that issue. Now you can see Republicans are sort of any proposal that comes up, they're, you know, will include pre-existing conditions. This is something that Trump has mentioned before as well. So Republicans are trying to, I think, thread that needle where they want to replace Obamacare. They want to get rid of it and replace it with something, but without getting blamed for making things worse, causing less access or higher costs. In the public's mind, Democrats have the upper hand on health care, and they have traditionally, and they still do. So it's an uphill battle for Republicans to really sort of get, I think, the public to trust them on the health care issue.
That court battle really hinges on the question of the individual mandate that you know, people are forced to buy insurance, and if they don't, they have to pay a tax. Congress repealed the tax, and so now the argument in court is, well, without that, then Obamacare can't legally stand, because that's why the Supreme Court upheld it in the first place.
Right.
So I'm just wondering, you know, did the polls ever drill down on, you know, was the American public or is the American public angry about being told that they have to buy something? Did that rub people the wrong way at the time and not so much now?
The mandate always polled terribly. People did not like to be told that they had to, you know, were forced into this. And so that was one of the components that didn't poll very well. But again, it was really, there's sort of the overall feeling toward the healthcare law. And then you could drill down on some of the different components. And some of them the public liked, some of them the public didn't. Overall, they were unfavorably disposed to the law until it had been in place for a couple of years. And then certainly when Trump took office, we saw those numbers kind of switch. So I think it is now at least the most recent data, and I'm not sure how old it is, but it has over a 50% approval rating, the Obamacare, but not by much. So it's favored by a slight majority of the American people right now.
Joe Biden calls Medicare for All a noble idea, but he says it would threaten rural hospitals because of low Medicare reimbursement rates, in addition to taking away the option of private insurance.
My proposal is we take Obamacare and we build on the parts that have been taken away and we add a public option.
He says a new government insurance plan, similar to Medicare, would be available to everyone, including people currently covered by employer-based plans. Biden's plan would also expand subsidies, aimed at allowing more households to afford coverage, even as he criticizes Medicare for All as being too costly, raising taxes on the middle class. Bernie Sanders says while federal taxes would go up, there would be no copays or deductibles under Medicare for All.
I mean, that's the other thing. Democrats are out promising, you know, the sun, moon and the stars to folks without actually backing it up in terms of how much it's going to cost people in terms of, you know, in their paychecks and in their pocketbooks. I do think, again, strategically, it's a smart plan for Biden to say, listen, we're going to let everybody keep what they've got if they want. And then we're going to add on a public option that people can opt into if they don't like what they have. And that's the most, again, the most flexible, the less disruptive of the plans that many of the Democrats are proposing. And certainly it would seem that that would be more cost effective or, you know, not as expensive as scrapping the whole system and providing health care to everyone, including folks who are here illegally.
I think Biden, in your latest polling, is still in the lead, but that lead has been shrinking lately. Refresh everyone's memory on where, let's say, the top five stand at this point.
Yeah, Biden definitely took a hit after the first debate. He lost about 6 points in our Real Clear Politics average, but the latest round of polls have showed him stopping the bleeding. So he sort of stabilized in the mid-20s. Meanwhile, you saw Kamala Harris really get a bump, right? She's been basically doubled her support from about 7% to about 15%. Bernie Sanders has slid down to about 15%, and Elizabeth Warren has climbed up slowly but steadily to about 15%. So actually, in our latest average, Biden's at 28%. Sanders at 15, Warren 15, and Harris at 13.4. So I think this next debate in Detroit at the end of this month is very important for Biden. He has to prove that it was just he just had a bad night in Miami and he's able to, you know, up to the task. Otherwise, I think we might see his numbers take another hit and that could really change the dynamic of the race.
Tom Bevin, co-founder and president of Real Clear Politics. Thanks so much for coming on The Rundown.
You bet. Thank you.
Have a good one, Tom. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
I'm Jane Harmon. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
The Hong Kong protests that started in April haven't stopped. Tens of thousands back out demonstrating last weekend. More than a million people have taken to the streets in these weeks-long protests. What is causing such unrest? A piece of legislation called the Fugitive Offenders Ordinance, which they fear could undermine Hong Kong's autonomy and rule of law. An extradition bill that would have allowed some people accused of crimes to be sent to mainland China for trial in courts controlled by the Communist Party.
The intensity of this 4 months is quite unprecedented for a bill proposed by the government to have this intensity of discussion.
That is Carrie Lam, Hong Kong's chief executive, who kept pushing for this legislation despite loud calls for her to resign. Until a month ago, when Lam said finally the bill was suspended until further notice. Now, President Trump told reporters he did bring this up when he met with China's leader last month.
We talked about it briefly, but it's very sad. I've rarely seen a protest like that. It's very sad to see.
Now, activists want the U.S. to do more to help Hong Kong democracy.
The U.S. is the leader of the world that seems to have underestimated its moral authority.
Jimmy Lai is a Hong Kong entrepreneur and media executive who's made Forbes' list of billionaires. And he came to America trying to get U.S. leaders more involved.
It's a time for America to really display this moral authority to win this Cold War.
To get directly involved for Hong Kong.
Well, to discredit it, if you by helping us, by helping those Muslims being in the prison camp, in a million of them in Xinjiang, and those Christians being persecuted in China, and all those religious groups being persecuted, by helping them, you know, by also by censoring those who acted the persecution. Let those who act out the persecution have the consequences personally, that they know their action has consequences, you know, not just that I follow order. It's not my, I have nothing to do with it. No. You know, the children, the family, sanction them. Don't allow them to come to universities, the school here. Don't allow, you know, if they bought real estate, freeze it. So do everything to make sure that they know the consequences of the action. And by doing this, you display the, you know, the moral authority to the world that we can't tolerate this.
You are talking much greater than a Hong Kong extradition bill.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
You want the United States to be more active dealing with the human rights problems in China.
Exactly.
Obviously, President Trump is much engaged with China now in a trade battle.
Yes, yes.
That's very different.
Yes. Well, I think the moral authority is a great leverage on trade battle with China, because it's where the Chinese have none of it. It's where the Chinese is most vulnerable to it. So, you know, you have such a great leverage. Why don't you use it? If the Chinese, they don't want to negotiate, they don't want to talk, nothing matters. But now they want to sit down, they want to talk, you know, they want the deal done, just because it shows to you that the Chinese need the U.S. a lot more. They need the world a lot more than, you know, you need them. It is time that you use this leverage against them to get better terms.
Now, Jimmy Lai left New York to fly back to Hong Kong after he sat down with us. Last week, he went to Washington for talks with Vice President Pence, Secretary of State Pompeo, and the U.S. National Security Advisor. John Bolton says,
with respect to Hong Kong, we expect China, like every other country, to adhere to its international obligations. I think that's very clear.
After the Washington meeting, China's foreign ministry lashed out at Jimmy Lai and those U.S. leaders for undermining Chinese security, saying these national scum and Hong Kong sinners will always be nailed to the pillar of shame in our history.
We Hong Kong people share the same values as you Americans, just because of the legacy of the British colonial past. We grow up in the same value, and this time, we are fighting for our value because our freedom is being threatened. We are also, in a word, fighting your war in your enemy camp. By helping us, you're displaying a very strong moral authority to the world. And you have obligation and interest in helping us.
Now, Hong Kong, of course, you're right there, right next to the mainland. You mentioned British control. It was handed over to China in the 1990s.
Yes.
But you remain democratic. So how does it exactly work where Hong Kong is sort of independent, right?
You have
autonomy, but you're still part of China, right?
Yeah, we are part of China. We are still, you know, under their thumb.
How much control does China have?
Or total control if they want to. Yeah, they just don't cram down on us. You know, if this resistance movement goes on, you know, it's thinkable that they know they might calm down on us. You know,
The extradition bill,
yes,
that was attempted and has been put on hold, would have allowed people to be sent to mainland China for trial in certain cases.
Yeah, exactly.
And is that just feared that it's the beginning of something greater?
If the rule of law is undermined, our financial center status is also undermined, because without the rule of law, we won't have the financial center status, because there will be no mutual trust. If, you know, the people who trade will have no protection.
Right.
You know, so the whole Hong Kong will be undermined because we lost the status of financial center status. The stock markets are going to go down, and people who came from China to buy real estate and jack up the price so high, not because the real estate is worth that much. When they buy a real estate, they are also buying the rule of law, the human right, the freedom.
Democracy.
Democracy. That's the institutional value they are buying on top of the price they pay for the real estate. But if the rule of law is undermined, those people will freak.
Why does China not just take over? Come in and just take over and say, you know what, it's ours.
They might have to. One day they might have to. But if they do, that will be a big consequence for them to face. The world will know that.
What would it mean for you? I mean, you're a media giant in Hong Kong.
What would it mean for us?
Billionaire, what would that mean for you?
I would stick to the last day. You know, because, you know, I can't be one of the leaders of the resistance, and then I leave just because I have money. You know, it's a moral authority, it's a moral courage. You know, it's a moral issue that we are fighting this war. It's a moral authority that is the last thing we have to uphold.
So if in the end Hong Kong and the extradition bill someday happens,
yes,
that's the beginning of the end in your view?
Yes.
So that's why the fight has to happen.
The fight is the last straw.
And you want the U.S. to get involved on another front on human rights to call out China, because if they're called out on that front, they can't as easily take over Hong Kong.
Remember in 1963, when Kennedy went to Berlin and said, I am a Berlin.
The proudest boast is, Ich bin ein Berliner.
How much confidence and hope to reinforce the resolve of the Berliners to face the threat of the Union as Soviet Union.
Right.
And that changes the whole scenario of Berlin at the frontier of the Western world.
Do you think President Trump should go to Hong Kong?
No, I don't think so. He won't go to Hong Kong, but we are at the same situation now. We need your leaders to say words of empathy or sympathy to our people, especially young people, to let them know that you have our backs. Or for American to write to your congressmen, to your senators, to ask them to go to Hong Kong and hold our hands, give us encouragement, give us the power, the support to make sure that we know that you have our backs, so we will have a greater resolve to face this challenge.
Do you fear for your life, speaking out all that you do?
Well, the communist is very skillful in inducing fear to subdue people. And I've since long don't think about danger. If I think about it, I can't do what I do. You know, we are fighting a war bigger than the individual. We are fighting for freedom. This is Hong Kong people's freedom. If I think about what happened personally to me, I won't have the moral courage to do all this.
Jimmy Lai, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, The Candidates with Brett Baer.
Mike Allen, co-founder of Axios and co-founder of Politico. There's this incredible cult following around him. And I think it's a combination of people like his style, right? People like the millennial part of him. I agree with you about the unexpected part of him. And his bio, like the military veteran from the heartland.
Subscribe now to The Candidates with Brett Baer, wherever you get your podcasts, or foxnewspodcasts.com. It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Jane Harmon.
What's on your mind?
I think there's a chance not only that Bob Mueller will explain to the American people what's in his report, but that members of Congress will rise to the occasion on a bipartisan basis and ask serious questions. It's a teachable moment for America. Most people in Congress serve because they want to add value. It has been enormously frustrating to see the institution not function. Why doesn't it function? Because each side spends time blaming the other side for not solving problems. That's not a recipe for helping the country. It's a recipe possibly for reelection. And my view is, let's reelect people who want to help the country. And given all of the interest in what Mueller said or didn't say, let's take the 5 hours of public hearings where hopefully most members of the two committees involved, judiciary and intelligence, will show up and teach the members and teach the general public what the issues are. And what happens next happens next. But that, for me, would be a good outcome, and I don't think it's impossible. I think it's unlikely, but I think it's an important test, and I'll be watching. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.
Fox Nation is the place for exclusive content you can't get anywhere else. New opinion shows from Laura Ingraham, Tucker Carlson, and Tommy Lahren you can only get by signing up for Fox Nation. Go to foxnation.com today and sign up now for Fox Nation. Opinion done right now.